Hi, Professor Leek.
Nice to see you.
It's so lovely to see you too. So we'll just start off this with maybe a brief introduction of yourself. So what your research is like, who you are, what is translational research?
I'm Tashara Leek. I'm an assistant professor in the Division of Nutritional Sciences, but I also am an assistant professor in general internal medicine at the medical school at Weill Cornell Medicine. In terms of my research, broadly, I design community-based interventions for adolescents, and I primarily target and create interventions for adolescents from racial ethnic minority backgrounds and also those from low SES backgrounds. And I use a variety of methods, but also with my work, my real goal is to create like sustainable solutions. So it's not just me conducting research. It's also like, okay, after the study's conducted, how do I sustain this program and how do I have research that informs policy? So yeah, that's kind of like my research in a nutshell.
That sounds great. Are there any specific projects that you'd like to chat about?
Oh wow. So I have two main projects. Maybe one I'll focus on is ACE. So that's the Advanced Cooking Education Program. That's a 12-week intervention in collaboration with 4-H. It's designed specifically for eighth graders, again, from racial ethnic backgrounds and from low SES backgrounds. And so the program, it meets 2 days a week. The first day is a wellness day. And so the participants some mindfulness exercises, then some hands-on nutrition education activities. And then the really fun part is a cooking lab. And so they'll work together to prepare an ethnic dish. Like we're not making kale salad, we're making like arroz con gandules and other like really fascinating cuisines. And then they're going to talk about their experience preparing that dish. And then they're going to get the ingredients to take home with them. And then they get to make it for their family. So that's the wellness day. And then the second day for ACE is that they're going to engage in professional development activities and also do a bunch of like 4-H activities. And the whole goal is to expose them to career options in food and nutrition. I'm sure it's not a surprise, like the field is not very diverse. So what I'm trying to do is like show these early adolescents that there are some really cool careers in the field of nutrition broadly, right? Like everybody eats. So because everybody eats, literally, I can work for anyone, right? Like I can work for a large tech company and develop apps. I'm a dietitian, so I can work in clinical settings. I can be the dietitian for the Brooklyn Nets. Like you can literally work anywhere. And so we just want to expose these adolescents to some of those career options. So I'll just talk about ACE. That's one of my studies.
That is so incredible, and you're totally right. Food is everywhere. I'm thinking about what I'm gonna have for
Everywhere.
lunch.
Exactly.
So it sounds like you've had so many different experiences. You're a registered dietitian, you're a professor now. So could we maybe start from a couple of years back and chat a little bit about your undergrad experience? So what was your undergrad experience like? What were you involved in during your undergrad?
So I went to undergrad at UNC Chapel Hill. And I was pre-med. I always knew that I was interested in health. And so for me at that time, I just was like, oh, that means I'm going to be a physician. And so during undergrad, I did a lot of activities in addition to taking the prereqs, like a lot of activities that exposed me to different, like, in health fields. And so I remember being a part of the American Red Cross Club on my campus. I was also a part of the Minority Association for Pre-Health Students. And I did a lot of volunteer work. So I did all of that. And then a really great program I want to put a plug in for is at UNC and their med school, they have a program called the MED program. And essentially it's for underrepresented scholars who are interested in pursuing medicine. It's a summer program. And you spend the whole summer at the med school and you take like your first block of med school classes with their professors. And in addition to that, they do MCAT prep. and you're able to shadow physicians. And at the end, like they provide a letter of recommendation that you can use for your application. But during that experience, I was shadowing several physicians and I realized that like no one was talking about nutrition, right? Like I kept going into different patient rooms and like the appointments were really quick. It was like they were seeing patients for like 10, 15 minutes. And then people were having diet related chronic diseases, but there was no discussion of diet, right? So I'm seeing people who had diabetes, who had heart disease. And I realized during med school that they don't really teach nutrition. Like you might take a couple of weeks of nutrition and you're not even evaluated. It's kind of like an elective. And I knew that I wanted to do more prevention work. And so for me, I felt like nutrition is preventative medicine. And that led me to want to pursue a master's degree in nutrition after graduating from Chapel Hill before pursuing medical school. So that was like my plan during undergrad. So
that's such an incredible story and one that I think a lot of people will resonate with. I think so many people come into Cornell thinking they're pre-med because they'd like to go into health. And we're really not presented with that many other options when we're straight out of high school. So that's such an amazing story to hear.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So yeah, I don't know. And then like after that, so I pursued a master's degree at a smaller private school where I was getting the degree in nutrition. And again, at this point I had already taken MCAT. I had already taken all the pre-med requirements. So my plan was again, to get this master's degree and apply to med school. And during the graduate program, that's when I started to learn more about different types of options available to me. And I had engaged in research when I was an undergrad. Like I worked in a couple of different types of labs, but I think this is the first time I really was like, oh, wait, this could actually be something I really want to do. And I realized I like writing and I was like, oh, I really like research. And my mentor, my advisor was like, have you ever considered getting a PhD in nutrition? And I was like, no. Like, I was like, I don't even know what you're talking about. Like, what does one do with a PhD in nutrition? And it just completely sent me down a completely different track. And I fell in love with it. Like, I realized that while I value kind of like this one-on-one and like that type of interaction, I'm interested in solving systems level issues. So not just why one person has diabetes, why is it that this particular community is disproportionately at risk for diabetes? Like I realized that I really wanted to solve systems level, population level problems. And so I realized that the PhD was a better fit for me. Also, I get bored easily and I like to switch it up, right? And so the other thing I learned is that people with PhDs can often like switch their tracks. Like I just told you about one of my studies, but I have several studies and, you know, there's a common thread between them, but they're all different. And I wanted the freedom to create, like I'm a creative person. So like the idea right now, Angela, if you were like, hey, I know X, Y, and Z is happening in Brazil right now. This is a huge issue. Let's do something about it. I can do something about it. I don't have to get permission from anybody. I have to find money to do it, right? But like I can right now, we can come up with an idea and flesh it out and apply for money and go to Brazil. And I realized that that was really valuable to me. And I also realized that my time, I don't want to work a 9-to-5. I don't want to go to the same place every day at the same time. And that was also something I was just thinking about in terms of my lifestyle and how I wanted my days to look. I like that flexibility to be able to work at home sometimes, to be out in the community sometimes. So it just blew my mind and I was like, this is for me. And so after that, I took 2 years off after my master's and then I went and got a PhD. So yeah.
That's so cool because as undergrads, I think we often hear about this idea of a euphoric moment, like the eureka moment. So do you think you had that moment with your professor, with your mentor then?
I did, but I had it was in my master's program. Mm. So I talk a lot to my current and undergrad advisees because I think that you all may feel a lot of pressure. And I don't know if it's external or self-imposed around like, what do you want to do? Who do you want to be? And you feel like you have to have the answers. in undergrad, and I didn't have the answers, right? Like I found out what I wanted to do during my master's. And I saw this really cool quote going around on Twitter that was saying that, like, essentially, we should be focused on our purpose and not our path. So, in many ways, my purpose did not change. My path changed. And I wish that earlier on, I spent more time focusing on my purpose versus the path, right? And so this idea, I knew I wanted to be involved in health and health promotion. I knew the populations that I wanted to work with. That hasn't changed, but I need to be flexible enough. We all have to stay flexible enough about our path because sometimes we might close doors that we just don't even know exist, right? That's a piece of advice that I wish I had known and that I would share with others. It's like, focus your energy on figuring out what your purpose is. And the path will come.
That's incredible. And I think you've really lived that because so far we've chatted about how you had undergrad and then you went to get your master's and then your PhD. But here you are with also an RD. So how did that happen? What
Yeah.
happened after your PhD?
So I will be honest, like I'm still trying to figure out this. I gotta, I'm an RD and I'm still trying to figure out what that means. So I never went into any of this thinking about the RD. Like my master's program was a nutritional science program. And even during then, I was not thinking about the RD at all. So it was during my PhD, my program had a dietetics in a dietetic internship. And they told me, hey, if you're accepted, like you can apply for this and do this. And I was like, okay. And I was intrigued by the idea that I could still work in a clinical setting if I got this license. And I was like, okay. But I will say this, for people who have PhDs, they have something called an ISSPE. I cannot remember what it actually means. It's like individualized, specialized. Please forgive me. Essentially, if you have a graduate degree, you can create your own dietetic internship experience with certain universities. And so the cool part is that some of the rotations I didn't have to do because I had prior work experience. So like I didn't have to do a community nutrition rotation because by the time I was in graduate school, I had already worked for the WIC program. I had already worked for other community-based organizations. So they were like, oh, you've done enough. You don't have to do that. So, and also I was able to do it for half the cost in a shorter amount of time. So the ISSPE was a really good fit for me. And I did it at the end of my PhD. And now again, I have a clinical study that's going to be starting up this summer. And I think it was really helpful to have that, license. And also, I collaborate with physicians. So I'm still doing the work that I think I always was supposed to do. I think the question was, is like, what person do I want to be at the table? And I realized I wanted to be the researcher. I want to be the person who's creating the interventions or the solutions to the problems. But again, like I collaborate with physicians all the time. So yeah.
Thanks for sharing that incredible perspective. That's
Yeah, absolutely.
so moving back to maybe your lab here at Cornell then.
Yeah.
Are there traits that you think students should cultivate now, skills that they should look into? So you were talking a lot about purpose and how we shouldn't really be focusing on our specific path. So are there things that maybe transfer to multiple paths, multiple professions?
Totally. If you actually look at some of the most successful people, oftentimes they did not have a straight and narrow path. Like people really value diverse experiences. And so that's something I would recommend for students. Like do all the things. Like if you want to play piano, play piano. Like if you want to be a part of a club that has nothing to do with health, but you want to go into health, do it. And so I would recommend having summer internship experiences. I 100% recommend research. This is why I recommend research. I think a lot of students feel like research is like working in a lab with mice. And that's not true. Like that's one type of research. But again, I'm out in the communities. Like I'm with people. And then when I'm building relationships before I start studies, like I'm helping out with career fairs at middle schools. I'm going to PTA meetings. Like I'm out in the field. And so, and research also just teaches you really great, like, critical thinking skills. It helps you become like a better writer. So even if you don't want to end up in research, I highly recommend that every student before they graduate, try to work in someone's lab, just because I think there's some good skills that you could use in other settings. So again, get some research experience, be a part of lots of different clubs, and then also spend your time in the summers, like, just trying out lots of stuff, because you don't know what you like or don't like until you try it. And knowing what you don't like is equally important. Like, I hear students saying, like, oh, I really didn't like that internship. I feel like I wasted my time. And I'm like, no, that's a perfect use of your time. Like, aren't you glad you learned that you didn't like that 2 months in the summer versus you graduating and getting a job in that organization? And then you have to, like, quit for real, right? Like, and then that's awkward, you know, like, oh, okay, so I got to stay here for a year so it doesn't look bad. And then quitting, you know, and that's fine if you have to do that. But that's what I'm saying. When you're an undergrad, you have the permission to try lots of stuff without, like, consequences.
Right.
So do it.
Yeah, 4 years doesn't seem so long when you put it that way.
Yeah, it goes by so fast. I'm sure you're already realizing just, like, how fast time goes. And also, like, I mentioned the whole piano thing, and I wasn't joking about this, like, pursuing your other passions that don't have to necessarily do with your career. Like, this is a marathon, not a sprint. So you really want to make sure that you have hobbies and make time for wellness and things that bring you joy. I often tell students, right now, this is probably, like, the least busy you're ever going to be in your life. And then they freak out and they're like, what? Like, I'm overwhelmed. I have prelims. I have this. And I'm like, I know. This is the least hectic it's going to be, because right now you're just responsible for yourself. When you get out into this workforce, you're going to have to be, you know, working with other people. You're going to have to be managing other people. You know, like, some different work environments are really fast paced. And, you know, so I'm saying this to say, figure out wellness now so that as things progress, you know, you can keep that up. Like, you should still be able to read a book and be a physician. You should still be able to play the piano and be a professor or whatever it is that you want to be. Because you're just always going to be busy. So you have to make time for things that de-stress you and just bring you joy and help you disconnect from your work.
Yeah. I think that's something that we often forget. And I think you mentioning that this is the busiest time in my life also strikes me as something that's absolutely crazy, because here we all feel so stressed all the time, as if there's so much going on.
And it's real. Like, I'm not minimizing. Like, I know that you're stressed. And I remember being stressed in undergrad, right? I remember being in our student library or the student lounge, like, at 2 o'clock in the morning studying. It's real. But I'm saying, like, it's about time management, you know? So I hear a lot of students saying they're taking, like, 20 credits. And I'm like, why? You know, like, just take whatever is required. And then the rest of the time, you know, actually put it on your calendar. Like, I'm going to sleep in, I'm going to take a nap, I'm going to hang out with friends, I'm going to read this book, I'm going to do this hobby. And so it's about that, like, just building it in your actual schedule and putting it on your calendar, you know, time for you to do these other things that bring you joy.
Yeah, that's incredible. I think, like, something you were telling me at the beginning of our meeting was that you booked the rest of the afternoon for yourself for time off.
Yeah.
That's amazing. I think not enough people do that. And even students, we feel like we don't have the time to do that because we have homework, we have exams, we have prelims and things to worry about. Yeah.
Yeah. And I hope that it makes me, and typically when you take breaks, then you can come back refreshed and be more efficient, right? With your time and be more productive and just have a clear head to, again, yeah, be creative and all of that stuff. So yeah, it's really important.
So,
especially now with everything that's going on in the world, like, I think a lot of us are not pretending. We are still navigating as if all these horrible things aren't happening, right? And like, I still have work to do. Students are still submitting assignments when there's just, like, a lot of heavy things happening. So more than ever, you know, from the pandemic, from the explicit racism that has continued to happen, that is being highlighted right now. Like, we have to make time to take care of ourselves and not just like try to put our head down and keep working at the same rate that we were doing before, and giving ourselves some grace. Yeah.
So speaking of challenges then, I guess one of our challenges of the time now is the pandemic. And I was wondering if you faced any major challenges in over your career, anything that sticks out to you?
Oh, I mean, everything's a challenge. You know, I think at the time when I was in undergrad, I was first gen, right? So how to navigate undergrad when, you know, like things you don't think about, like the FAFSA, right? Like I had to figure out how that worked on my own, right? And funding, like how do I actually pay for my undergrad education, especially since I knew that I wanted more education, you know, thinking about the debt. And so I think that was hard. And I definitely experienced, I've experienced racism throughout my entire academic career, right? Like at every level from undergrad to now. And the thing about the further along, the higher up you get in terms of like your degree, there are fewer and fewer people who look like me, right? And so that can be really isolating, you know, and trying to find, I don't know if the word is peace, but like just trying to figure out like, how do you exist in a space that historically wasn't created for you to exist in? And how do you solve, like my work, I'm working in communities with people who look like me, who have similar backgrounds as I had growing up. So my work is deeply personal to me. So it doesn't feel like work, right? Like this is my purpose. This is my purpose. So it doesn't feel like work. But it's like navigating these spaces, especially with all this going on, it's hard. And I don't have an answer other than like, I have community, you know, I have amazing set of friends and family. And I just think the more you might feel isolated, the harder you have to actually try to prioritize building community. And community doesn't have to be at the university, right? Community might be you found some great organization within Tompkins County or in Rochester or online, especially now since everything's online, right? Like I'm in a writing group with other women of color who are at different universities, and we meet every Thursday from 2 to 5 to write. And we'll check in the beginning, but it just feels good to have a safe space with people who I know we have shared values, and you can come and be your whole self. So it's like, but we had to create that for ourselves, right? And so, you know, those, I think it's hard when you feel, when you are a part of a group that has historically experienced systematic fill in the blank, right? For me, it's like racism. For others, it's like poverty. For others, you know, so all of the isms right now, I feel like are being like, I think people are like, enough is enough.
Yeah.
And I feel like a lot of systems, including higher education, we're saying it's becoming more and more diverse. And we're saying the way it used to work, it can't work like that anymore. And I know this university is talking a lot about belonging. And I think we got to really, really think about what does that mean? Not just for there to be people present here representing a variety of different types of groups from different backgrounds, but what does it mean for you to actually feel like you can show up as your whole self? Because when you can, like we'll be just like 10 times better at everything. Like our quality of life will be better if we feel safe, and we will be more productive, but we still have a lot of work to do to get there.
Yeah, definitely. There's been so many recent events that have pointed out all of these different isms that you're talking about. So thank you so much for sharing your story.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So I just have maybe one more final bigger question for you then.
Yeah.
So you've chatted about research opportunities for undergrads and community nutrition and your interest in it and how that developed. So how would you encourage students who are both in undergrad now to enter research? So how might that look like? What's the process like to join a lab, and what kind of traits are you looking for? And then how would you encourage students who are maybe just finishing up their career to look for opportunities outside of the university? Maybe this is two separate questions.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'll think about what is, so one, I typically am looking for upperclassmen because I want, like, I'm looking for, like, freshmen are hard in that, like, you're just trying to adjust to being on campus, right? Like, you're just trying to figure out what's the best time to go to the cafeteria, right? And so I like when students are a little bit more settled and have taken some of their harder coursework and have just, you know, adjusted to campus life. But I know others who definitely like hire under like freshmen to work in their labs. Some very specific things that you can do is like there's those city trainings. So if you search CITI Cornell, like there are required like ethics type of online classes. And like you are required to complete those before you can engage in research. That's everybody, like faculty, anyone. So if you've already, you could do that before you apply. So for me, if you already done that and it's listed on your resume, it shows that you're interested in research. There's also other free things and trainings you can go to on campus, like through the Bronfenbrenner Center. They had a great like 1 hour workshop on how to conduct focus groups. CISR and the Survey Research Institute, they do trainings on how to use like different software like Qualtrics to program surveys. Mann Library teaches how to do how to use reference citation managers. So like things like EndNote and Mendeley. So my rule is this, you have to know how to do something that is of value to me right now, and then I will teach you new things. So you have to be able to communicate, like, I already know how to use Mendeley, so I can help you with your citations, and then I will teach you how to use some of my diet assessment software or whatever. So I think having students focus on what are your skills. And again, skills don't have to be these complicated research skills. Like I had an amazing undergrad who was a food photographer, and I was creating my curriculum in partnership with the food science department, Dr. Christopher Loss. And so we had all these recipes and we needed somebody to take the pictures. So again, like you all have skills that are like really appealing to faculty. I think a lot of times it's just that you don't even know how to like to market them or even say that you put it on your resume. You know, like the food photography thing, or like if you're good with technology and know how to use Adobe and design, you know, if you know how to create recruitment flyers. So I think there's a lot of skills. I think a lot of times students just don't think about it. They just think about these super, super technical things. And that's not true. Like, I think you all already know how to do some things that are of value. So that's to the undergrad question. And then for the what happens after, you know, I think there's a subset of you who are probably ready to go to graduate school. And so, you know, you'll do that. But in terms of work, it's honestly, you all, I'm going to tell you something you're not ready to hear. It is trial and error, right? Like you just need a job, right? Like you graduate from undergrad and you just need somebody who's willing to take a chance on you. So I think you got to kind of lower your expectations for that first job. You just want to be able to get a job that's something of interest nonetheless, but it's not going to perfectly align with everything that you want to do. And in that job, you just want to learn all the things. You just want to learn as much as humanly possible. And then from there, you can be more selective, right? But I think students think they're going to graduate and have these like magnificent, shiny jobs post-undergrad. And I'm like, no, it's hard to get a job. And especially now, right, when unemployment is high, there have been so many people who've lost their jobs in the pandemic. You guys, those who are graduating this year are going to be competing against some of those people who are maybe 20 years older than you with a lot of demonstrated work experience, right? So that's what I mean by like, give yourself some grace, get a job. And just learn what it's like to just work, and then things will fall into place.
I think that's maybe been the theme of our whole conversation here, is things eventually fall into place.
Yeah, yeah. Again, just focus on your purpose. For me, I knew I always wanted to work with kids. So like in undergrad and a little bit in grad school, like I worked at the YMCA. I wasn't teaching kids how to do anything nutrition related. I just worked at the Y. We were playing and, you know, but it demonstrates on my resume that I was invested, like that I enjoyed working with kids. So that's what I mean by purpose. Like figure out, I always tell students, figure out some of your keywords. So like for me, my keywords would be like adolescence, you know, poverty, obesity or chronic diseases, health equity. Like just pick some of your keywords and then find jobs that are in your keywords versus, again, that align with your purpose versus the path. So just find stuff in your keywords, even if it's working at the YMCA, which was an awesome job. I love that job.
Yeah, that's really, really awesome advice. So in the interest of time, we've chatted a lot and I would love to let you go and relax and do the things that you love. So thank you so much for chatting with me and sharing all of that with me.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me, and well wishes to you all as you're taking prelims and as the semester is coming to an end soon. I just wish you all well. So yeah.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Stopping the recording here.